Case number 20-1453, American Clean Power Association petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Tabat for the petitioner, Mr. Kennedy for the respondent, Mr. Jones for the interveners for the respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Gabriel Tabak on behalf of petitioner. Your Honors, FERC's post-Ameren orders imposed a new rate that was fatally flawed for three reasons, requiring remand from this court. First, FERC clearly risked undue discrimination by vertically integrated transmission owners against competing generators, despite evidence that transmission owners still own generation in the region. FERC failed to meaningfully address this evidence and failed to square its determinations with its own precedent, rendering its orders arbitrary and capricious in violation of the Administrative Procedures Act.
Can I ask questions about that first point?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
What would the discrimination look like? And I have two possible kinds of discrimination in mind, and I wonder if you have one in particular that you mean when you say discrimination. One would be that transmission owners that also own a generator would kind of make a different binary decision on whether to transmission fund or whether to self-fund or whether to have a generator. That's one type of discrimination. They would make that based on whether they own the generator. The other type of discrimination would be, well, we'll run up the costs a lot when we self-fund, so long as the generator is owned by somebody else. But, you know, if the generator is owned by us, then we're going to be kind of conscious of costs and we're going to go with the lowest bidder so long as that kind of thing. So, are you imagining both of those types of discrimination or just one or a third type?
Your Honor, I believe those would be closely linked in practice, but principally the first, that that transmission owners would have an incentive or what the Ameren Court referred to as a competitive motive to use transmission owner funding strategically against independent generators where they might not be using it for affiliated generators. Potentially driving up costs for those competitors.
They would allow the owned generators to fund, but they would not allow independent generators to
fund. Yes, Your Honor.
What does it matter what form that preference would take, whether it would be, does it matter whether that preference would manifest itself in version one or version two of Judge Walker's question, or it's simply the substantial risk that there would be preference in one form or another, whether they would allow generator funding or would fund it themselves, because it's all the same thing if they own the generator funding it themselves or generator funding is transmission funding.
Your Honor, I think either of the two circumstances that Judge Walker outlined would squarely fit within the commission's concern with the motive for undue preference and undue discrimination from transmission owners against independent generators, as exemplified in Order 2003, which governs FERC's generator interconnection rules, upheld by this court in National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners versus FERC.
Yep. Can I ask, from your record evidence, what percentage of transmission owners in MISO own, directly or through affiliates, generation? Because I heard some, substantial, majority, vast majority. What's the percentage? What's the number? What's the percentage?
Your Honor, I am not certain of the percentage off the top of my head. We're aware that the Ameren Court indicated that only one of the petitioning...
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
But your briefing sure sounded, like I said, at the time it got to a majority and vast majority, and so I'm kind of
a significant majority, Your Honor. We're aware of at least 27 transmission owners in the region that still own generation.
And how many total transmission owners are there?
I'm not certain of that figure off the top of my head, Your Honor.
Well, to say substantial majority, you've got to know that 27 it's got to be less than 27.
A fair point, Your Honor. I don't have the figure of MISO transmission owners off the top of my head, unfortunately.
Mr. Tabak, why was that information not before the Ameren Court?
The number of...
That they concluded there was just one and it wasn't... Why was that information not before the previous panel?
Your Honor, the commission made its pre-Ameren findings without respect to whether the transmission owners still own generation. I think that was part of the Ameren court's basis for vacating the discriminatory treatment portion of the underlying orders from FERC. Because of that, the commission, I don't believe, had that figure in evidence, and the court relied upon the proportion among the petitioning transmission owners.
And since the orders that FERC issued on remand, is there any evidence of actual discrimination against independently owned generators?
Your Honor, it's impossible to know that because of FERC's practice regarding the agreements. In circumstances where a transmission owner and a generator come to terms on one of the three categories of agreement at issue here, those are filed unexecuted at the commission, those are not filed at the commission. They would not generally be available to anyone, only in the circumstance where the generator and the transmission owner cannot come to terms would they be filed unexecuted at the commission. And we're aware of at least 18 agreements that have been filed unexecuted under protest since the Ameren decision, and at least 21 that have been filed for the retroactive 2015 to 2018 period since the Ameren decision. But the inability to determine the level of discrimination, if any, really speaks to the need to develop a record here, which is something that only the commission can do.
On the topic of one, are there 27? And of those 27, are you talking about a transmission owner that also owns a generator? Generator that is connected to MISO, or are they just transmission owners that own a generator that's somewhere in the country, maybe not connected to MISO?
Your Honor, it's the first circumstance. Okay. They own transmission and they own generation within the MISO footprint.
These agreements that have been filed with the commission because there's disagreement between the generator and transmission owner, did any of them involve generators that were owned by that transmission owner?
Sorry, Your Honor, could you repeat that last part?
You said these filings with FERC, when there's disagreements between the generator and the transmission owner,
mm-hmm.
and coming to agreement for terms for the connection, did any of those involve the situation where the generator was owned by that transmission?
We are unaware of any where the
So these have always been between independent generators and transmission owners that there have been disagreements.
We are unaware of any where that have been filed unexecuted between a transmission owner and its generation owning affiliate.
You're aware that at least some of them have the opposite?
Yes, Your Honor, between transmission owners and an independent generator.
You think they're all between independent generators?
To our knowledge, Your Honor.
Unsurprising. Mm-hmm.
Is a rate making challenge sort of the default method for combating undue discrimination? In general,
the commission has a range of potential approaches at its disposal. A rate making challenge would certainly be one of them. We certainly wouldn't want to presuppose precisely the form that commission action could take on remand here. But our focus is on FERC developing a sufficient record to be able to identify what the risk of undue discrimination is and balance it against any risk to the transmission owners.
So the reason I ask is if a rate making challenge is sort of the normal remedy, the default remedy that FERC makes available in the case of potential undue discrimination, then it might seem that FERC didn't need to explain why it was defaulting to the default in terms of its choice here. On the other hand, if it's not the default, if it's somewhat of an unusual remedy, then it might make sense to say, okay, FERC, if you're going to choose to allow rate making, if you're going to say rate making challenges are the remedy to combat potential undue discrimination, then you have to explain why you're choosing it.
Your Honor, you're referring to the commission leaving the door open for individualized Section 206 complaints against undue discrimination here?
Yes.
Yes. That is extremely atypical and inconsistent with the commission's approach to the relationship between transmission owners and independent generators, again, as exemplified in Order 2003. There, the commission's actions really were aimed at preventing the potential exercise of undue discrimination by transmission-owning utilities. That's really where the commission's precedent is. Not to say that the commission could not adopt something different, but under the APA, the commission needs to adequately explain why, where it has not used individualized rate-making challenges as a means of remedying undue discrimination in the past, it would be opting to do so here.
Mr. Tabak, what precisely did you expect FERC to do on remand after the Ameren decision, right? So Ameren, on one level, had an economic theory that transmission owners, couldn't be forced to operate as nonprofits, right? And in light of that holding, what precisely did you expect the agency to do?
Your Honor, that's a good question, and one for which I think the most ready answer is the New York order, which this court allowed to be lodged from September, which postdates the briefing. In that order, the New York transmission owners filed at FERC to implement a nearly identical transmission owner funding practice. And I'd refer the court in particular to paragraphs 33 to 57 of that order, which detail both the transmission owners' evidence that they submitted on what they believe the level of risk to them from these network upgrades was, as well as countervailing evidence that was specifically submitted on these points from generators, from state parties, from other entities, on whether they believed that these were realistic risks, and if so, what the scope of them was.
Was that not part of the voluminous record before FERC, before the 2015 orders? Was that information not part of that record?
The record prior to Ameren did not reflect the scope of any risk in any kind of quantifiable way to transmission owners. There are a lot of assertions in that record that the transmission owners face risk, but with no particularity. Again, I think the New York order stands as a substantial counterpoint to that and indicative of what the commission is fully capable of doing upon remand.
So is your view that FERC had to create a record that demonstrated that the Ameren court's economic theory was correct?
Simply that the commission, the Ameren decision at various points seemed to have no confidence in the level of the commission's record on the key basis for the remand and vacature, and with instructions for things like holistically assessing the risks and benefits to transmission owners, to fully consider arguments. Looked at in its entirety, the Ameren decision simply does not seem to have expressed confidence in FERC's level of record development underlying it, which is why, in our view, the reasonable thing for the commission to do, with some latitude for precisely how to structure it, would be to accept evidence on those core issues. Your Honors, returning to the second and...
I was going to ask, are there other regional transmission organizations that allow transmission funding like this?
No, Your Honor.
This would be the only one?
MISO is the exception. The New York transmission owners, again, sought it, but the commission denied it. There is a comparable proposal that is still before the commission from the Mid-Atlantic grid operator, PJM, that has not had final commission action yet.
How would, in this case-by-case approach, if the agreements between transmission owners and their own generators are not getting filed with FERC, because presumably they work out any disagreements amongst themselves, how would discrimination be proved on a case-by-case basis?
Your Honor, it would be extremely challenging. From the Ameren decision and from the three orders under review here, it seems that the theory would be that if, to Judge Walker's second point from earlier, that if generators believe there were excessive costs included in their network upgrade expenses that they were being billed for, they could file a 206 and contend that the transmission owning utility was escalating costs. But as to sort of the strategic application of...
They were escalating costs, but they were doing it to their own generators. Would that be a viable claim?
If a transmission owner were escalating costs for their own generators and to the independent generators?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll say this is what we need to make a sufficient profit.
Your Honor, it might be, but we simply can't know. Again, there's simply not evidence here to show whether or not there the core point that the Ameren
Would you be able to prove discriminatory treatment? Just that, put aside excess costs. Would you be able to, how would you be able to show discriminatory treatment?
In a context where there only a 206 complaint is available,
mm-hmm.
It would likely have to be under the excessive cost or if there were additional sources, for instance, state regulatory filings that showed differential upgrade costs for affiliated generation. Those would not be before FERC, but it's possible that depending on what state commission rules require, there might be evidence available. That would vary significantly state by state.
Do the states covered by MISO require such filings? I mean, have you looked to see if there's this is there, actually happening?
Yeah, there's wide variation in what the level of detail before state commissions might be, Your Honor. But it is certainly not the case that there would be a readily available information in all states in MISO that a independent generator would be able to ascertain if they had been subject to undue discrimination where a transmission-owning utility had escalated costs to them, but not their own affiliated generation.
I had one other question, too, that do you dispute that whatever the rule you think FERC should adopt, yes or no, on transmission funding, that the rule should be the same for direct and indirect connections? Do you dispute that aspect of their reasoning?
Your Honor, I think that needs to be broken into two parts, prospectively and retroactively.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I meant prospectively.
Prospectively, the commission, if the record demonstrates comparability between the parties who are subject to those three types of agreements, that could be a reasonable approach. Comparability is simply presumed, and the order in which FERC determined.
Well, how would they not be comparable?
Your Honor, they very likely would be, but I think that would have the ultimate determination would have to wait for a commission determination of that.
Well, I'm just. Do you have a theory on how they wouldn't, the two situations wouldn't be comparable? Possibly.
Your Honor, I
don't have enough experience in this area to be able to understand why there would be any differential treatment.
There could be differential treatment based both on aspects like the multi-party facility construction agreement that have multiple funders for them. There could also be differences in the type of facility being funded. For instance, the Ameren Court noted that in the region for upgrades above 345 kilovolts, 90% is funded by the generator, 10% is passed through in transmission rates, and a rate of return is recovered on that 10%. So it's possible there could be variation by both agreement type and upgrade type. But again, those are fact-specific matters that we can't know until there's a record on those points.
If I could share a theory of the case that you won't like and ask you why it's wrong, I'm going to share a different theory of the case with FERC and ask them that they won't like and ask them. Here's the theory I want you to tell me why it's wrong. We start with what you and Judge Millett were just discussing, that, you know, FERC before Ameren decided the indirect and the direct transmission owners had to be treated the same. And that wasn't disturbed by Ameren, and as I see it, that may even be sort of a done deal issue. And so then the question becomes, well, is FERC going to level up by allowing both direct and indirect transmission owners to self-fund, or is it going to level down by not allowing either of them to do it? They tried leveling down, and Ameren said that one of the problems with that is enterprise risk. And Ameren didn't leave a lot of room for FERC to later say, well, we don't think enterprise risk is a real risk. I think Ameren made pretty clear that it's real. And so to the extent that you're going to level down, it's because you have to have a different reason that is more important, that outweighs the enterprise risk. And the most logical different reason would be this potential for discrimination. And so then that raises the question, well, is there evidence of discrimination in the record? Seems like there's not evidence in our record of discrimination. Because Ameren said there wasn't evidence in the record and there hasn't been any more record. And then Ameren said, well, there could be an economic theory for potential discrimination. We're not going to give a lot of weight to that because there's only one petitioner who owns a generator. But we now know that there are 27 or something. And so then your case against FERC has to depend on saying why FERC was wrong in that situation to say the remedy for that potential discrimination is individualized rate making challenges. And FERC said that's the remedy. And they didn't give a lot of explanation, but they gave enough explanation. And they do this in other contexts. So it was a reasonable remedy to choose, and it was reasonably explained. So what's wrong with that theory of the case?
Your Honor, 2 points on that. The first is that on the initial part of that theory of the case, you mentioned the comparability determination from FERC. That was in an order that was itself vacated by Ameren. So I think that issue is remains open for a future evidentiary demonstration through a commission proceeding. The second point regarding the risk of undue discrimination, the Ameren court quite clearly left the door open based on the competitive motive that transmission owners still owning generation would have. Petitioner proffered that evidence. The commission notionally accepted it at paragraph 38 of the second of the three orders, the order on briefing and rehearing here. But to call that cursory treatment, I think would be generous there. That is the precise animating rationale that this court acknowledged could pose a risk of undue discrimination. And again, that risk of undue discrimination, the potential for competitive motive, is precisely what the commission has used to justify, and this court has upheld in prior rulemakings and proceedings between transmission owners and generation. So at a minimum, the commission needed to better explain why it found that evidence unconvincing and why the remedy that it adopted there of individualized determinations was consistent, or why it had changed its mind from those past determinations, again, upheld by this court.
If we were to say exactly that in remand, would that get you pretty much what you want from us in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. We would submit that on a remand to FERC, the commission would of course have some latitude about exactly how to structure it, but we would fully anticipate that they would develop the record in a way comparable to the New York order that's lodged here, that holistically looks, as the Ameren court put it, at the risks and benefits to transmission owners, that considers the potential undue discrimination for independent generators, and considers those things through development of substantial evidence, which was the second of the 3 points I was going to lay out at the outset.
a long time ago.
Yes, development of substantial evidence to fully support ultimate orders here that considers all of these aspects rather than a cursory reversal without further record development, which is what occurred here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I think we have, we'll hear from FERC now.
Your Honors, Robert Kennedy on behalf of the commission. Judge Walker, picking up on your question, part A, whether or not the distinction between generator direct connections and interconnection agreements, whether they are similarly situated. In response to that, counsel indicated that the commission's determination was vacated, which it's true. That was initially made in the underlying orders. In footnote 77 of the remand order, the commission noted that, reaffirmed its determinations. And I would agree with you. I think the idea that there's any distinction as to how indirectly connected generators should be treated versus directly connected generators is a done deal.
I agree with you on that. But I have to say I'm pretty sympathetic to the second thing he said in response to my very long-winded question. So if you could address what I think is his strongest point, which is the decision to allow rate-making challenges to be the remedy for potential discrimination was unexplained.
Well, I think certainly the commission flagged that as, first of all, if I can step back, and I don't mean to sidestep your question, but I, but I will get there. But I think it's important to understand the context in which this took place. The entire case was started by the commission in its sua sponte investigation. So the commission took on for itself the burden of establishing that the existing just and reasonable rate, transmission owner funding, the option for them to unilaterally choose that was unjust and unreasonable. And then the second part, the commission had to establish that a replacement rate was just and reasonable. And the replacement rate is the unilateral selection by the generators as to self-funding. The commission didn't, and that was vacated on by the Ameren court. So the question before the commission was, A, based on the entirety of the record, can we, and in taking into account the infirmities flagged by the Ameren court, can we make a renewed finding that transmission owner funding is unjust and unreasonable? And if so, then can we go on and establish a just and reasonable replacement rate, the absence of it, giving the generator the individualized choice, the unilateral choice. In answering part one, could the commission establish that transmission owner funding was unjust and unreasonable? Not that it is just and unreasonable, that it is unjust and unreasonable. A little difference in the burden of proof there. The commission made two findings. One, compensation, which I'll come back to, and the second was discrimination, getting back to your question. Again, there was no evidence of actual discrimination in the record. The record has been open since 2005. There has never been any showing. Had there been, the commission obviously would have been interested. It would have bolstered its initial finding. Second, as to an economic theory for discrimination, the Ameren court noted and the commission accepted that there really is no economic theory supporting the potential for discrimination as to those generators, as those transmission owners that are not, affiliated with generators. As to the third, the commission accepted their proffer that, and I don't know the numbers, Judge Millett, but the orders say a majority of the transmission owners in the Midwest are affiliated with generators. It accepted that, but found that that did not make the existing transmission, and accepted that there would be an economic motive for them to discriminate. It's not evident, there hadn't, again, if this has been in place a while, there was no evidence that had been used in that manner. So the question before the commission, okay, does that make the existing transmission owner funding option unjust and unreasonable? Now, obviously, this is all made against the backdrop of the Ameren court's decision that the commission's previous remedy was constitutionally and statutorily on shaky ground, to say the least. But the commission said, okay, we have the normal process for this. When there's disputes regarding interconnection agreements, there's a process that can be ironed out. Claims of discrimination can be raised in there. You'll see in these orders, the commission said, you know, if transmission owners are treating their affiliates one way in terms of not making them fund or vice versa, treating their affiliates different, making different choices.
How are they going to show that?
Excuse me?
How are they going to show that?
Well, so, and my initial point with respect to all your questions about the adequacy of the remedy, the commission flagged it at its remedy. And there was no dispute raised. There was no questions raised as to its adequacy.
FERC's the expert here. Claims to be the expert agency. How are they going? How did FERC, in making this choice,
correct,
think they were going to show actual discrimination if the agreements between owned or affiliated generators and transmission owners, there's no disagreement, and so they aren't filed with FERC? How are they going to show it?
So the commission hasn't, in these orders, worked out. It didn't want to prejudge those issues. It said in here.
Prejudge? It said this is a remedy. How can you think something's a remedy if you don't have a conception of how it might work to show discrimination?
Well, correct. The way these normally work is a party comes in and says, I'm being overcharged. There's a dispute as to the agreement. You bring a complaint, you make a prima facie case saying I'm overcharged, I have some other issue. And then there's a process. There's discovery involved and all that in which.
Does discovery get into whether they're overcharging there are other in other agreements?
I think in this context, given what the commission held in these orders, that if there is differing treatment, that would have to be explained by the.
I'm going to back up. You're saying what would happen if they showed differing treatment?
No,
I'm asking a predicate question. They come in.
Sorry,
if you were answering it, go ahead and finish.
So I think
there is differing treatment. I'm trying to get to that question.
The commission flagged in these orders again that if that transmission owners need to treat their affiliates and their need to have a valid reason if they're going to treat them differently. Why? So I think that is a live issue that could be raised in these complaint proceedings that the commission established.
How are they going to? Sorry, I'm not being clear somehow here. All right. I am an independent generator, and I think this is way too big a bill. Mm-hmm. Charging for too much stuff. I file a complaint with FERC. Now, I would like to, I suspect they're not charging their own generators. They own, the same transmission owner isn't charging their own generator that type of extra costs. How do they show that?
Well, I'm suggesting that if there is a prima facie case being made in the complaint.
Case of what?
That they are being overcharged.
Uh-huh.
Or treated unfairly.
Those are two different things. They don't know if it's unfair.
Correct. That they are being overcharged. That there is discovery that takes place in there. And I think given.
Discovery of what?
Of the cost, you know, you can try and prove that it is being overcharged. So I think.
Would that discovery include generator or transmission owner? Did you impose these same costs on generator X, which happens to be affiliated with you? Do you get to look at other agreements as part of that discovery process?
And my bottom line answer is I can't answer that definitively. There is a discovery process, and because...
Well, if FERC didn't think that they would be able to show... If FERC had no be able to make this showing of differential treatment, how could it possibly have thought this was a remedy? Didn't it need to explain how this would work, how it would address discriminatory treatment?
I'm saying the record here does not reflect what would happen in the discovery process. I'm suggesting the commission has identified in here that if there is differing treatment, that is something that needs to be explained. So it could be a valid basis for discovery.
Maybe one way of answering Judge Mott's question, what's happened with the 18 or 20 unexecuted contracts that have been filed?
So I think what that is.
I mean, what happens in that case?
I'm not sure I know the answer to that, where those stand. I think that number captures the number of agreements entered into during the interim period that then the transmission owner came back and said, I would like to take advantage of the opportunity to self-fund these upgrades. I don't know if there are allegations. I'm unaware of what the status.
So those aren't necessarily contracts in which there's an allegation of discrimination.
That's my understanding, and I think it's 21. That's what I think that number is, and you see that in the end of the second rehearing order. In this case, those are out of the universe of roughly 100. Agreements entered into while this proceeding was going on. There's about 21 that a change in the funding mechanism was made.
But this, as you've said, look, this is our usual, we do this all the time. People can always come file complaints on a case-by-case basis about rates charged. They can always do that. This is not a novel process created for this problem. So there must be rules about what this discovery, that's right, we have rules on what discovery can, what comes in and what doesn't. And so do non-filed agreements between other generators and that transmission owner. Is that relevant discovery? Or is that something that's confidential and isn't going to come in?
Well, again, because the record in this case does not reflect that. And there have been no, I understand your frustration. And I think it stems from this.
I'm aware the record doesn't reflect it.
There has been no allegations of discrimination. The issue has not been litigated. So I'm not sure.
They can't figure out how to
for discovery. What's the standard for discovery?
Well, I think it has to be relevant to your allegations. It's not. I apologize. It's not my
judgment. Less hypothetical seems like that information would be relevant.
It could. Yeah.
Is it relevant if they have to make a? They've made a prima facie case that they've been charged a lot of high costs. They haven't made a prima facie case that it's because of discrimination. Do we just infer when there's high costs that it's discriminatory?
No.
No, we don't do that. So they don't, what prima facie case does this person who thinks they've been, this generator thinks they've been charged too much, how do they get even a prima facie case so that it will be relevant for discovery purposes of discrimination?
Again, because this issue has not been litigated, I can't answer your question.
All right. But we can all agree then that FERC did not explain how a prima facie case of discrimination would be made on a case-by-case basis.
I agree that the commission identified this as its preferred remedy.
Are there other FERC orders
there was no issues raised with it that the commission had the opportunity to.
Are there other Are there other situations where FERC has said, we see the structural problem? You said FERC said a majority of transmission owners also own generation. We know at least 27. That's more than the one that was at issue in Ameren. We see the structural problem. We've recognized that as a structural problem for years and years and years. Is there another situation where they've said, let's solve that case by case?
Nothing immediately comes to mind, Your Honor.
No, but again, it's a structural problem before.
There's a theoretical problem. That's what the commission acknowledged here.
Original sort of significant orders on this thought it was just theory.
Sorry, I missed it.
The whole reason that there was all this impetus to try to stop, I think, what then Judge Roberts called the bad old days of vertical integration. That wasn't theory. That was a real problem that FERC has been trying to get rid of.
Absolutely.
For quite some time. That's not theory. That's not economic theory. That is the problem that FERC has been trying to eliminate through orders. And so now you have an order that says, we accept that, I'm told, 27, or FERC will go with FERC's own answer, a majority of these transmission owners own their own generation. We're taking that as given. And we don't know if that's a problem or not. You come prove it on a case-by-case basis. And you say you're not aware of them ever having done something like that before. When they have, in Ameren, they didn't have the evidence. And Judge Silberman was quite clear, the court was quite clear in that opinion, and Judge Silberman was quite explicit at oral argument. It would be a totally different case if they had that evidence. And so here FERC has it. But now it seems to be walking away from what it's been doing for years and years and years and years and trying to eliminate vertical integration.
So my answer is the Ameren court also made clear that the commission's, the remedy it initially chose was statutorily and constitutionally infirm.
Because there wasn't a discrimination problem to be remedied.
I believe the court said even if there was a theory supporting discrimination, then the commission would still have to answer the second question. Again, remember, it's a two-step process. Is the existing universe unjust and unreasonable? If yes, then okay, what can we do about it? And the court found that there were significant concerns with the commission.
Where did FERC say here that it couldn't do anything about that discrimination? The only thing it could do was resort to this.
Well, the commission did walk through it and retracted and explained why its previous findings as to why.
All it did was say what the Ameren court said.
It went beyond that, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. It found one of the points by the Ameren court was that, and again, this sort of goes to both sides of the equation, whether the existing rate is just and reasonable and what a replacement should be. But that the commission had never really grappled with the transmission owner's position that operation of these network upgrades subjects them to risks which are not compensated under the current tariff scheme. The court said, kind of the commission, you sort of dodged that issue. Go back, take a look at the record, and address it. And the commission did. It accepted the transmission owner's proffer that operation of these does subject them to a variety of risks that are not compensated under the current tariff regime.
So option C might be let them compensate for those risks in the tariff.
Which transmission owner funding does, because then they get to be able to put it in.
But it does more than that. That's the problem. It's that FERC never considered an option C, which would be generator funding, but the tariff has to allow compensation for those risks.
I mean, certainly there could be other ways.
Didn't consider any other options.
Well, because the question before the commission was, based on the record, could it reaffirm its finding that transmission owner funding is the initial hurdle it needs to clear, that it is unjust and unreasonable? And because there were uncompensated risks, the commission found that it was reasonable that generators should.
Where did they explain it was those risks were so substantial? Where did it give an explanation as opposed to just stated in a conclusory form that those risks were so substantial they outweigh this imperative that has sort of driven FERC for, as I've said, years and years and years of policing, being suspicious about and trying to eliminate vertical integration? Where do they say make that balance?
Well, I think it, as you walk, it, it, clearly does not use the language you just used, but it walks through its findings.
Tell me where you think it makes that balance.
So I think if you
look... Which order, too, are we talking? Because we had...
I'm sorry, I lost the last end of your...
We had a lot of orders here, so tell me which order first and then which page.
I guess I'll start with what we call the remand order around page 225 of the JA, paragraphs 38 and 39.
Oh, hang on.
I'm sorry. We could start there if you like, but I'm sorry if I could redirect the court's attention to the remand order, which is actually at one. I'm looking at pages 156 and 157 of the JA.
Okay. So tell me where they made that balance between the two.
So I think if you look at paragraph 31 of the remand order, the commit, which is JA 157, the commission finds that there are, based on the record, there are uncompensated risks that transmission owners are subjected to through operation of these network upgrades, and that they shouldn't be, that is essentially in part two of that sentence there, basically says that it's reasonable that they should be afforded an opportunity to be compensated for those risks.
Where does it say this harm is so much that it outbalances what we have long recognized to be a discrimination problem? It's that balance. You're saying they had to balance. There was two things going on here, and I don't see that. Okay, we see there's a problem. Cameron told us there's a problem. Our record doesn't rebut that problem.
Well, then I think
that problem outweighs the risk of discrimination.
And then I think you go to the remand rehearing order, paragraph 38, where again it talks about here we are.
I got to find where. What page?
That's page 225 of the joint appendix, paragraph 38, which is the remand rehearing order.
Well, that's just again. That's just conclusory, right? I mean, if I were describing their decision, I would say they decided that there isn't enough. Let's see.
And then,
is not itself to demonstrate there is undue discrimination.
Correct, and then it identifies the remedy there, and then on the next page again it on page paragraph 39, it reiterates the point that there's not enough evidence in the record to overcome the transmission owners showing that they do take on risks when they operate those.
Describing what Ameren said, it's not making an expert judgment.
I'm sorry,
39 is just describing what Ameren said.
Well, and then I believe that.
The court remanded for a reason, because it wasn't making the decision, and it thought the expert agency here, who is the expert on this risk of undue discrimination, is absolutely the expert and has the ability to see, well, how big is this risk of uncompensated costs? And then balance those two interests, and it didn't do that. I mean, it could, maybe, this question, I'm not here to say what the right answer is. Is to say that was in picking this case by case so-called solution or remedy that no one seems to know how it's actually going to work, and FERC didn't grapple with that over as a solution here, as opposed to considering any other options or just explaining why we're no longer concerned about majority ownership problem here and its discrimination, Ameren was very careful to say, we're not dealing with that situation.
Correct. But I believe the commission's analysis here is that it could not carry its burden of showing that transmission owner funding is unjust and unreasonable because A, there are uncompensated risks there, and B, yes, there is a potential for discrimination with respect to...
Is there a dollar value anywhere on those uncompensated risks? Like what percent? I mean, if they have uncompensated risks and it's, a material percentage... in a way that's going to affect their profits, their attractiveness to investors, that's one thing. If at the end of the day it turns out to be, a penny on $1,000, then the balance would be different. Did FERC anywhere sort of see what the magnitude of that lot, that uncompensated risk is?
I don't believe the record here reflects that. I will sort of take issue with your point that maybe it's a different question if it's going to throw them into bankruptcy. That's really a
I didn't say throw them into bankruptcy. I said material in a way that would affect their profitability or their attractiveness to investors, which is what Ameren was concerned about.
That's sort of a step two question in, you know, would eliminating it be just and reasonable? But here the commission, again, found that the record didn't support the first part of the 206 analysis.
You would agree that if there was a problem of under-discrimination and transmission owners came in and said, weren't able to collect a penny last year. We missed a penny. It would be quite unreasonable for FERC to say, okay, let's not worry about that discrimination. You need your penny, right? Now, I'm sure they're going to say it wouldn't worth a penny, but what I'm asking is, to make this judgment about whether this remedy is the way, is just and reasonable, this case-by-case remedy for discrimination is just and reasonable because of this other harm, don't we need to know what that harm, not just words for it, but like some sense of how material that harm is, how significant it is? Does it really have an impact on profitability or investment?
Well, I think the statutory context and the standard and sort of what was happening here matters. The existing rate was transmission owner funding. That was the existing just and reasonable rate.
So FERC's not capable of thinking of anything else.
I'm sorry?
FERC is not capable of saying transmission owner funding is fine as long as something to protect against discrimination. Or transmission funding is out, but generating funding is fine as long as uncompensated costs, the tariff allows for incorporation of these costs and risks into that. FERC can't do that?
Only if it first establishes under Section 206 of the Federal Power Act that the existing rate is unjust and unreasonable. Mm-hmm. Only then can it get to the second step. Mm-hmm. And again, the commission here.
So in this two-step process here, they could have said unjust and unreasonable because of discrimination concerns that were not before the court in Ameren, but were specifically reserved and acknowledged that could change everything. So that's the it's unjust and unreasonable for that reason. But we're not going to go just going with generation funding. That would not be just and reasonable either because of these unincorporated. If they were material in any way, these unaddressed costs.
Certainly if the commission.
Your generator funding tariff has to allow for addressing these costs. They can't do that?
If the commission found that the record supported a conclusion that the existing tariff was unjust and unreasonable, yes, it has sort of broad remedial authority under step two of the analysis, again, bound by. It's statutory authority and
the Constitution. Mr. Kennedy, why did FERC have to decide whether the transmission owner funding was unjust and unreasonable? I mean, what is the commission's view about the intervener's argument that this is a Heckler v. Cheney type of situation?
I'm sorry, I lost the end of your question.
That this circumstance where you have a remand and the court has vacated all of your orders, including the order to sua sponte consider whether transmission owner funding was just and reasonable. Did the commission have to go back and make any determination?
No, again, this started back in 2015 as a transmission owner coming to the commission and saying, it's unjust and unreasonable that bringing a complaint to the commission saying, if this generator was directly connecting to me, I would have the option to self-fund. And the commission took it and it should be extended everywhere.
Right, and then the commission sua sponte considers the question as a whole.
So following Ameren, what's the state of play? The state of play is that the commission's changed to the existing status quo, which was transmission owner funding in the generator interconnection agreements, but not in the indirectly connected agreements. That was the status quo. So then if the commission wanted to change that, wanted to take it on, it again, as I've been sort of trying to explain
today.
Well,
it had to do that. It had to deal with the indirect connection issue, the otter tail issue. They couldn't have just sort of said, never mind, we're dismissing our complaint. They had to deal with otter tail's complaint.
Correct. And then the commission.
So they had to do something. They had to pick one solution or the other because I think, at least as a prospective matter, no one's complained. No, I haven't heard people saying it was unreasonable for FERC to equalize the treatment of direct and indirect connections. And so then they had to pick. Right, this wasn't like we're just dismissing our complaint and going away. They had to deal with this otter tail objection and come up with a solution to it.
Correct. When the orders on the commission's Yes, that's what's left. The commission took it upon itself to extend transmission owner funding. To take away transmission owner funding, to change the status quo. When the orders were vacated, the pre-existing status quo was transmission owner funding in the direct connections and indirect. That should be equalized. The commission relied on or reaffirmed its previous finding that all those parties, whether directly or indirectly connected, are similarly situated, and that the pre-existing just and reasonable rate should be extended to those indirectly connected agreements.
My first question was, where is FERC's explanation for why it believed case-by-case challenges were adequate? What's the answer?
Well, I think in the remand order,
you pointed us
again. I
not only read what you pointed us to, but I wasn't surprised that you named those JA pages. Those are the JA pages that I've got scribbled all over in my notes before oral argument. And I think the closest FERC comes, I'll give you a chance to tell me why I'm wrong, is paragraph 38 on JA 225. And the last sentence there, it says that a WEA, I'm going to skip ahead a bit, does not show why the ability of interconnection customers to challenge costs for the commission is inadequate. Fair enough. Maybe EWEA did not show why that's inadequate. But I think FERC had to show why it was adequate. And where is FERC's explanation for why it was adequate?
Well, I think in the Ameren decision itself, the court flagged this as one avenue to...
But would you agree that if I read Ameren for the fifth time, if I read Ameren and I don't find what you just said, do we remand?
Do you need to remand? No, because I think this goes to the first part of the analysis. Was the commission reasonable in concluding that the existing setup was unjust and unreasonable? And there's sort of two bases there, and I think they're independent. That one, there's uncompensated risk, and therefore it's reasonable to offer them some degree of compensation. And again, the idea that the commission has not expounded on how this would work out in practice, it sort of reserved the issue. If you look in these orders, because the same issue came up with respect to how we're going to treat the interim agreements. The commission said it would take a case by case, didn't want to prejudge the issue, and would take a case by case approach to how we would deal with it.
Great, thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, Your Honors.
We have an intervener now.
Good morning. May it please the court, Christopher Jones for the interveners. Judge Millett, I'd like to start, if I could, with the case by case issue, because there's a fundamental misunderstanding presented by the petitioner's argument. I think petitioner actually said they can't know if there's been discrimination. That is absolutely not true. This whole scheme is part of the most transparent regulatory regime that the industry has frankly ever seen. And over the 15-year history of transmission owner optionality, the reason that, there has not been a single allegation of undue discrimination, but the reason they can find out.
Is history of this in any other regional transmission organizations?
Your Honor, I think counsel was correct that other RTOs have moved off in different directions. Mm-hmm. So the transmission under funding was originally developed by the commission in its pro forma order 2003. It remains in the Mid-Continent just by virtue of the way that the Mid-Continent tariff has developed.
And then can I ask you I just wanted to get to the chase because time is short. This discovery issue that we were talking about which I confess profound ignorance about how it works before FERC. So if an independent generator comes in and says, I think I've been overcharged in a way that makes the rates unjust and unreasonable, FERC. And does that allow them to get discovery of the agreements not filed with FERC between that same transmission owner and, say, generation that it owns?
Absolutely, Your Honor. These contracts are not, these are not secret contracts. The only reason that those contracts that are agreed upon are not filed with the commission is only because they use a pro forma form. And the commission for workload purposes says, if you use the form contract, I don't need to see it. That's the only reason those contracts are not filed with the commission. In fact, now I can't say this for with
certainty. Where would I find?
So there's two places. I haven't checked in recent weeks, but at one point every contract was actually available on the MISO website. Again, Midcontinent itself is a party to these contracts. Mm-hmm. They sign them. Mm-hmm. Second place is.
And those form contracts, will they detail the charges? Because my assumption is that the independent generator doesn't have a form contract.
So
it's getting charged more? Would it allow you to document whether owned generation and this independent generation are charged the same things? Can you tell that by looking at the
funding election, that has to be memorialized in the agreement. It's apparent on the face of the agreement.
All these costs?
Well, the costs, indeed, yes. The upgrade costs are absolutely in there as well. The costs for building the new line, for building the new substation,
Every piece of evidence they would need to know whether they were treated exactly the same as a transmission-owned generation. Every detail of that contract, every number, is going to be there on MISO's website, just like theirs.
Again, at one time they were on the MISO website. Again, the second, I don't know if they still are. I don't run the MISO website. The second place, though, Your Honor, is the commission, in lieu of requiring them to be filed, asks for this thing called an electronic quarterly report, at which point every contract is listed and the parties there, too.
Listing contracts and parties isn't the same thing as the details in a way that would let me know if I was treated differently or the same.
I don't believe the petitioners have ever asked.
Not my question. It's whether the information, I at least was concerned about if you're going to have a case-by-case approach, it's got to allow them to show discrimination. And it wasn't clear to me that this discovery process would allow that.
I would suggest that it doesn't even need to get to a formalized discovery process. Again, with an independent entity running the transmission system and signing these agreements, our funding elections are not secrets. That is just not true, that they cannot know. And again, I think the only reason there hasn't been record developed there is because I have not been made aware of
these things. When you say funding election, you mean transmission funding versus generation funding?
Yes, Your Honor.
No, but that's not, the point is the details of it, like what they're charged.
As to, for, is your question, Your Honor, did we just simply charge them more for the same widget?
That, yes, or a higher rate of return, there's a lot of ways and a lot of numbers that a transmission owner could, up things for. I'm not saying this is happening, to be clear. This is all hypothetical.
To be clear, and let me unpack those in the order which you presented, but in backwards, actually. The rate of return absolutely cannot be changed. That's regulated by the commission. It's in the tariff. We have no ability to change that or charge different rates of return to different customers. Would not be allowed. That's the filed rate doctrine would prohibit it. As to other costs in the agreement, those are costs flowed through on an actual cost basis detailed in the agreement itself. So a typical generator interconnection agreement will say $10 million for a new substation, $5 million for a reconductor of this line, and $5 million for some other labor associated with doing the project. Again, the reason, and you're right, at some point this entire regulatory regime was grown out of a suspicion of vertical integration. I would grant you that. But what we have in its place is an independent entity and a pro forma contract that makes these details available.
It's too bad FERC didn't say what you've been saying.
Your Honor, I think maybe the reason they didn't is because it's so ingrained in the regulatory regime that this is the transparency of it, and that these contracts are not state secrets. In fact, we would expect to own our cost estimates and expect to own our funding elections at every turn.
Well, also transparent, then why would there even be a need for this case-by-case ones?
If
the rates returns, if all these charges are out there and they can't be changed between different generators,
But what petitioner is worried about is the funding election, and we do have that optionality, but that optionality has been in the tariff for 15 years.
I think they're worried about the funding election. I think they're worried about what's going to happen with the funding election.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed the question.
I think they're worried, not that, they're not worried just that you pick transmission funding in the abstract. It's what transmission funding allows to have happen. That's what they seem to be worried about.
It is. It would allow us to earn that regulated rate of return, which we cannot change. That rate is in the tariff.
Mr. Jones, is part of your argument that because there is so much transparency, there is in fact not a lot of discrimination because everyone can kind of see what is happening in these contracts? I mean, do you think the transparency in part eliminates the possibility of discrimination or eliminates the actual, like any, you know, possibility of actual discrimination?
Your Honor, I don't know that I would go so far as to say that mere transparency would per se eliminate all possibilities, but it would absolutely bring it to light where it to occur.
Them?
Absolutely. I mean, again, the vertically integrated utilities operate under a comprehensive scheme of regulation to ensure exactly that the transmission system cannot be used to provide preferential access to an affiliate or a cell phone generator or transmission customer. That's the entire regulatory regime that's been in place now since 1996. So when we say
your decision in Ameren said the reason that there would not be discrimination risk is that there was only evidence of one, and then specifically went on to say because this has all been getting this vertical integration has all been getting driven out by FERC and its orders. We did not say anything about it won't happen because of transparency.
Well,
it can't happen or it will be such a minuscule risk. And this is all the balancing that normally I would have thought FERC would do. They would say, because of this transparency, because of this, because of that, maybe it could happen, but it's hard. Even if you have 27 of these folks owning their own generators, it's just really hard to discriminate these days because of other protections we've put in place. And the costs and risks that are not being compensated are high enough to make this, you know, that balance that we need to worry more about that than we do about discrimination. But I just don't see that anywhere in FERC's decision.
Well, I think the Ameren court's discussion of vertical integration went to motive. And what the commission did on remand said, we looked and again, see no record of a single allegation over a 15-year history of transmission owner optionality in funding that this has ever happened.
Well, they said that's because for a while there was a third option that was being used. First of all,
that's right,
you don't have a peer record.
Yes.
But again, it's the question here is FERC needed to explain why with these two concerns. And when Ameren was on a record that didn't have really a plausible discrimination concern. And then they say, we accept the association's evidence that in fact, there are 20, some majority of integrated, vertically integrated transmission owners. We're accepting that now. So now we have a problem that we didn't have in Ameren. And then said, we accept that there's uncompensated costs and risks, or maybe it was just ended up being uncompensated risks. But it didn't quantify those. And it never did this balancing, which it's the expert. It could get this information and strike the balance as it seems reasonable.
But I think the reasonableness of FERC's reaction in that situation, Your Honor, goes from the fact that this rate has been in place, like I said, for 15 years. And the commission has known that there has been no generator has ever stepped forth and said, I am being treated unfairly as to the funding election. Or there may have been cost disputes, but those can be handled. I don't know that there was ever a discrimination cost dispute. But again, the commission, I think, was absolutely reasonable to say, we you know, the court told us we overstated the risk of discrimination, we understated the risk to the transmission owners, and we look back on the record and we think that the court had it right, that we got that balance wrong.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, we'll give Mr. Tabak, we'll give you 2 minutes. If you can start by responding to this argument about can't have discrimination with all the transparency that's out there. So what are you guys really worried about?
Thank you, Your Honor. On that point regarding the potential for discrimination and transparency, we note that the core issue here is that while MISO is an independent administrator of these contracts, the election is unilaterally done. The election of which funding structure to use is done by the transmission owning utility at their sole discretion. MISO can reflect that. MISO will collect the associated rate, but that is not with that is not the decision of the independent grid operator.
The decision. Getting back to your first question, I think.
So why should FERC have kind of believed there would be discrimination once you also allowed self-funding by indirect?
Your Honor, two responses there. First, the Otter Tail complaint dealt with one category of the affected transmission owners, the facility construction agreements. It did not deal with the multi-party facility construction agreements, which is a separate category, and that sort of leads to the retroactivity to 2015 for that category that wasn't on notice.
I think I'm asking a different question.
Yeah, I think so, Your Honor.
Before whatever year it was filed, what year was Otter Tail?
2015.
Before 2015, direct transmission owners could elect to self-fund. There's no evidence that they were discriminated. And maybe it's because of this transparency incentive to not discriminate. Who knows why? But they weren't discriminating before 2015. And so now that we add a new group that can also do what direct transmission owners were doing, why would we think the indirect transmission owners are going to discriminate when the direct transmission owners never discriminate?
Your Honor, I would simply say that factor, if it was animating FERC's decision making, is not reflected there. They did not.
I'm pretty I agree with you, and that's probably the case. But what's your answer to the question,
Your Honor? Our response there is that the structural motive that the Ameren court noted is still present, and the commission's response to structural motives has been to structure prophylactic rules that prevent the potential exercise of undue discrimination by transmission owning affiliates. Again, if the commission changes its mind, it needs to adequately explain why the new remedy it's proposing is sufficient.
Mr. Tabak, you've also asked us not just to remand for further reasons, but also to vacate FERC's decision. I mean, what will happen to all the contracts that have been entered into in the interim?
Your Honor, for the contracts that have been filed unexecuted, I would imagine that the commission will have to revisit those. Those, I believe, are treated as open proceedings at the commission. And there may be an opportunity to move away from the funding election. For the contracts for which the parties reached agreement and they were not filed unexecuted, my suspicion is that those would not be reopened because the parties had a meeting of the minds. But ultimately, whether there needed to be some remedial effect here because all of FERC's actions were immediately timely sought rehearing and timely appealed. If there's constructive notice back to that date, then FERC may be in the position, depending on what the record reflects, of having to consider a retroactive application back to 2018 or back to the interim period.
Do you agree with the predicate of Judge Walker's question that there was no discrimination by direct transmission owners that directly own their own generation prior to 2015?
I would agree that the commission did not deal with any complaint on that front. My understanding is that transmission owner funding was little used prior to that period.
So it wasn't used often, so we don't really know then. There wasn't sort of a statistically significant sample before 2015. Is that your answer?
I think that's accurate, Your Honor.
And now it would be pretty universally used within MISO. Is that the point?
Our understanding is it has become prevalent in the region, and this speaks again to the indicative precedent here is what I would believe led to the New York transmission owners filing for comparable treatment here, in the September order that's lodged with the court.
It's such a great gig that everybody's doing it now. Why weren't they doing it before, the direct transmission?
Your Honor, I can't speak to the decision making process at that time. I mean, there could be various factors that play in here, including the type and value of the network upgrades that might be at issue, which again speaks to the need for record development here to establish both what the risk of undue discrimination might be and what the risk, if any, to the transmission owners is, and to holistically assess those risks and benefits simultaneously and arrived at a reasoned conclusion that balances them.
If we remand and FERC comes to the same conclusion in their explanation, everything Mr. Jones said.
Honor, if FERC does the type of record development that it did in New York and adequately explains itself, I think that would be a very different case from the one before the court today. I can't presuppose any action from independent generators at that stage, but it would look like a fundamentally different case from the one the court's considering now.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
For all the attorneys, and the case is submitted.